This is GM Authority Weekly, episode 72, recorded on August 23rd, 2011. 23,000 Alexes. GM Authority Weekly is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk for the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more. Visit GMAuthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Weekly in the iTunes Store. It's time for GM Authority Weekly, and we're going to talk about the latest General Motors news, including anything and everything about Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Opel, Vauxhall, Holden. Did I miss anything? I think that's pretty much all there's to talk about this week. All the General's products is what we'll be discussing. We have one regular member of the GM Authority crew with us this week, Manoli Katakis, Editor-in-Chief, GM Authority. Manny Hilton's not here today, so we're gonna have to do a lot of talking.
A lot of back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
It's a conversation.
Yeah, and we've got a lot to talk about.
Starting with, let's give people our phone number first before we go any further, because I kind of forget that, and then we end up glossing through it at the last minute. If you do want to call in and talk to us and leave a message or have anything to comment about on the show, give us a call. The number is 313-355-3GMA. That's 313-355-3GMA. So what do you think? First thing on the list, 2012 GMC Katie Denali as part of the GM Authority Garage.
One of the many cars in the GM Authority Garage this week.
Man, we got a full house.
Yeah, they just picked it up recently, and I had it for about a week or so. I managed to rack up 600 miles almost. So I drove the thing quite a bit.
Imagine a poor schlep was going to buy that after it's considered used.
Or any media car for that matter. Yeah. What surprised me though was that this did not come with the all-wheel drive. I assumed that the Denali package would come with all-wheel drive standard, but no, I got the FWD. I got the FWD package.
Wow.
But thankfully, I mean, with that, I got 24 highway miles, and you know, me and my driving, and you know, 600 miles. I'm kind of glad I at least got that much fuel economy.
So what was the sticker on it?
The sticker on this thing, we had $48,420. That includes the $810 destination charge they were asking for it. And you're looking at about $3,700 in options for the Denali package. And so, this is on top of it already being a Denali. They're like,
so it's or maybe it's a Denali, this is all, plus some.
I mean, maybe it's all included as a Denali, but here's our options here. We have touchscreen navigation with rear view camera display, an RSE system, DVD headphones, you know, the whole shebang there. Mm-hmm. And if we also had a 110 volt power outlet, or 120 volt power outlet.
Good.
In the back there.
Yeah, 110. Yeah. Nice.
Yep, and a crystal red tin coat, which was an additional $395.
Okay.
This thing was shiny. This thing was a cruiser, but I figured there would at least be more chrome in the interior. A lot of it still like screams, bargain price Denali, Chevy Traverse. I mean, the whole dash is pretty much just like this monochromatic rubber / plastic, and I mean, that kind of looks cheap, especially for a $48,000 car. I mean, you want some extra colors. You want some chrome. You want some different materials to kind of like ease the surroundings a little bit. That was probably my biggest gripe in the interior. It also didn't come with things like heat and cooled cup holders, which I don't know. I'm surprised it didn't. You did get heat and cooled seats though.
That's good. See, that's only available on the Traverse on the LTZ trim.
Oh, so it is available on another car.
Yep.
Yep. And it didn't come with adjustable pedals. Thought maybe that would also be there too.
Yeah, I don't think any of the Lambdas do that.
Yeah, it's just the GMT models.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I mean, everything. It was a fairly comfortable car. Driving it, it drove as big as it looks. There's a lot of body roll in the car. It brakes fairly okay for a car its size.
So that touchscreen nav, that, how much was that, by the way?
That touchscreen, that's a $1,890 package, and it's the latest version.
Worst touchscreen nav ever.
Yeah, but it's still it is the latest version too. Which, I mean, as far as touchscreens go, like I would like to see them, because they haven't really changed like the formula since they first had touchscreens in GM cars. It's all the same. Like, why can't I like put my finger on something and just kind of like scroll the whole map and sound like point,
tap.
You know, tap, you, and then it moves the crosshair to a different location, and you tap it again.
The worst thing is that doesn't even have the MyLink, you know, or the IntelliLink.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying $1,800 for something that doesn't have Bluetooth streaming, that doesn't have the capability to, you know, do voice commands, you know, decent voice commands.
Right.
The OnStar directions integration is pretty bad. You know, if you want to be really honest, I don't know. I just think that that entire nav system, that infotainment package and nav package, just needs to be revised like yesterday.
Yeah, it's definitely not. It's not a big leader in terms of like refinement and technology. It's still it's an old GM setup, layout, whatever. It's probably as good as it's gonna get for a while though, which is another sad part. But people like it. People are buying it. There's a lot of demand for the Acadia Denali, and I see a lot of them on the road, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
They're almost always in red and white.
Because I have yet to see a Denali.
Really?
Yeah. I've never seen an Acadia Denali on the road, except for in dealerships.
I think demand has gone up for the Acadia Denali so much that it might be 2012 model year, they are increasing the volume of all Acadias to 30% of it being Denalis.
So 30% of the mixed volume, huh?
Yep, is going to be a Denali.
Wow, that's impressive. So people are buying them. People are eating them up.
Yeah, and I think of the profit margin on this thing too.
Did you climb into the back seat there, into the third row?
The third row is only meant for children. That's all I got to say about that.
Really?
Yeah, there's no way. I don't know what they're advertising, but a full-size adult is really going to feel cramped back there.
Well, I'll tell you, when I had the Traverse, it was a 2009, I believe, Traverse with the third row.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there isn't a difference in the seating arrangements between the Acadia and the Traverse. You know, I felt actually pretty good sitting at third row. I spent about a good half hour there, and I didn't feel bad. I mean, my knees were about maybe one quarter of an inch away from rubbing against that second row.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't as bad as some of the other vehicles. You know, but having said that, I think they still could do better with that third row, that entire configuration on the entire Lambda, you know, mm-hmm. lineup. First of all, I say they could do better with the space configuration and just be more space efficient, because those cars are huge. I mean, they're like 200 inches in length, you know, some of which are longer than the Tahoes and the Yukons.
Yeah, well, you get like tons of trunk space in the back there.
You do,
too.
Yeah, there is a lot of trunk space. You're right.
I mean, the Acadia Denali, like if I were to give this car like a roll, like I would either consider it being, you know, just a high class, you know, mommy car, or like a decent business shuttle. Like, you know, you want to drive people to and from places. An Acadia Denali would be a good fit. Say you only have, you know, three or four people that you want to say pick up from the airport and drive to somewhere. Acadia Denali will get the job done, I think, pretty good. You get
for fleets.
For fleets. I guess that's pretty much it. Like, say a business has it in their fleet. It would make a good shuttle. You do have the outlet in the back. People can plug in their laptops. You know, they can get work done in the back seat there.
Did you have the captain's chairs in the second row?
Yeah, it was captain's chairs in the second row, and up top you had the glass roof.
Oh, okay, the panoramic.
Yeah, the panoramic roof. It was really so that was a nice touch.
That's cool. Does that open? That big roof?
No, just the sunroof up front opens.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Here's another gripe too, is there was no engine upgrade with this thing. It's the same exact engine as you get in normal Acadia, which kind of goes against what we traditionally see with Denali models. With the Yukon and Sierra Denalis, they got the upgraded to the 6.2 liter V8 as opposed to the 3.
Right.
So maybe it's in the cards for the future. Who knows? And then you got at the same time when you're considering a premium crossover like this, hovering around 50 grand, it's like, do you go for this?
There's a whole bunch of stuff you can get. You can get the new Mercedes ML. You can get the X5. You can get the Q7.
Yeah, but the X5 can't seat.
Nope. No, you're right. So, two rows.
So, yeah. So this, I mean, it is a bigger car, but you could even get yourself, a decent Yukon for that price. Or a Tahoe LTZ. Or an Enclave, what is it, CXS?
Yeah, the CXS is the top of the line, yeah. Well, they've gone away with that for the 2012 model year.
Yeah, but, I mean, a loaded Enclave will run you about the same sticker price.
Now, what's interesting to me is that this has the LLT engine, not the LFX, even though it's a 2012 model year.
A little birdie told me that the LFX is having problems already. Have you guys had any deliveries of 2012 V6 Camaros yet?
Nope.
There's a reason for that. I don't know. I don't know what that reason is, but they're holding them. They're holding them at Oshawa.
That's not good.
Yeah, that's one of my dealer buddies told me that they haven't been able to see delivery of any 2012 V6 Camaros yet because, for one reason or another, they're having problems and they're holding all of them.
Wow. That's not good. Is there a specific reason as to what the problem is?
No, it's pretty hush hush. That's all anyone knows.
That's not good.
Nope.
That's really not good. Cause I really had high hopes for that engine,
Yep. Well, I mean, the power output's there and the fact that they kind of integrated the exhaust manifold into the engine block is also
And the injectors are now, quieter and more refined. I was really looking forward to it. That's a bummer.
Yeah, so hopefully they work out the kinks, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's the Acadia Denali in a nutshell. It's good. It's not great. When they picked it up, they dropped off a Chevrolet Volt to replace it. And it is the 2011 model, which I'm kind of disappointed by because the 2012 Volt is already out. But basically, what you get with the 2012 model is pretty much the same with the 2011, except that it's a little cheaper for the 2012 because they got rid of a few features like standard leather and standard sat nav.
That is kind of peculiar to me because people are spending, okay, fine, 40 grand, 41 grand, whatever, right, on a vehicle. You might as well just give it to them. Just give it to them. They're losing money on it. So I guess, for GM, it's a matter of how much money they lose versus how satisfied their customers are for what they get. Because they're going to lose money on it either way for the first few years.
Yeah, and that whole premium trim package on the on the Volt with the sat nav and the leather and everything, that's nearly a $1,400 package.
Right.
So and then there's like a $700 package, which is the rear camera park assist, and that's all the ultrasonic rear parking and
right
in the front too. So like it gets really annoying when I park my car the Volt like either in my garage or at a parking lot, and as soon as I swing the car into reverse or whatever to back out, the thing's already going haywire because it senses that there's stuff in front of me even though I'm going backwards.
Yeah.
It yells at me a lot. It beeps. There's a lot of beeps with the Volt. I'm going to have to turn it off.
Yeah, you can turn that stuff off. I turn it off quite frequently when I drove the Volt for the last couple of days here. About a month ago.
No, I did get a chance to drive a 2011 Volt for a day before. So I wasn't like, you know, oh my God, this is like so different. This is so crazy. But yeah, I mean, for those of you that have never driven an electric vehicle before, you will be surprised on how much more quiet these vehicles are than compared to your standard, you know, gasoline engine powered cars.
And how much more torquey?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You get, I believe, 273 pound feet of torque with this car,
yep.
Which is, I mean, for a car the size of a Chevy Cruze,
let's just say
that's
this.
Just awesome.
Yeah, it's not a golf cart.
It is not. At least a 50.
Right.
I mean, there, and that's another bug too. They still have to work out with electric cars. Is when you get into the higher speeds, the torque, it just drops. You know. Unlike with a gasoline car with a transmission where you can constantly bring the torque back by switching gears.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Because there are no gears in the Volt. There's no standard, you know, what we know as a transmission. There's just a diff.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of buyers will kind of they won't realize it at first, I think, but as mm-hmm. they get to drive the car more and more, they'll kind of appreciate it, I think.
Yeah, because the thing, yeah, there's no gear change. There's no, like, you know, sudden, you know, like little bump, little jump or loss. Yeah, you just glide effortlessly mm-hmm. forward.
Yeah, there's a
quietly.
There's kind of like this upward hill next to where I live, and it goes mm-hmm. on for a good, probably, you'll spend a good minute to a minute and a half driving up. Mm-hmm. And the road, they just repaved the road, so it's completely smooth. So you can really, you know, gauge how the car is behaving, whether it's shifting, when it's shifting, how it's mm-hmm. shifting. And when I had the Volt, I just, you know, that was my favorite thing, is to take it up this hill and just, you know, no shift whatsoever.
Did you experience any torque steer?
No.
Yeah, that's the other cool part, too, is that even though it has, you know, 273 pound-feet going to the front wheels, there is no torque steer. It just goes straight.
Yep.
It's awesome. Like that. That's awesome. Driving the Volt is just it's a blast. There is a you know, it does have some torsional stiffness though, as is kind of the tradition with GM's Delta II platform. Now we get it in the Cruze. You know, we're probably gonna get it in the Verano. You can probably find it in the Opel Astras as well. And this car is just it's planted. It's a fairly stiff ride,
right?
But not crazy. But that also has a lot to do with the hard tires. You got these ultra, like, super low rolling resistance tires from Goodyear, and they basically just help, you know, that much more with the efficiency of the car. This car is actually also one of the most aerodynamic cars they've ever built. I think the only car that GM's built that is more aerodynamic is the ZR1 Corvette.
Right.
And that's kind of saying something.
The interesting part about the way that they've integrated the design mm-hmm. into the, you know, it's not a Prius, you know.
It looks Prius, so much better too.
A Prius looks like, it just looks like something that compensates.
Toyota built this, you know, very efficient hybrid car, but it punishes you with this god-awful design. This god-awful, that's so bad that it's actually become like a culture.
Right.
Like there's like a cult following behind the Prius.
Sadly.
Because it looks so damn bad.
Yeah, the other thing, when you were talking about how planted the Volt drives, I think, the Cruze, they started with the Cruze platform, obviously, with the Delta mm-hmm. platform, but that in and of itself is a very good architecture.
Yeah.
Very planted as well, you know, very, it's got a lot of torsional stiffness in the platform. But what makes the Volt so much better is that not only does it still carry that torsional stiffness over, but it's also heavier because of that T-cell, you know, the T-shaped battery. And mm-hmm. that weight isn't all the way in the front of the vehicle. It's not in the back. It's kind of right in the middle.
Yeah. It's got great weight. And it's not just in the middle, but it's very low.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very low, so you don't feel top heavy or anything.
No.
There's not a lot of body roll. It's just it's great to drive.
You will
be surprised on how well it drives.
Yeah, I hate to admit it, but I kind of hooned with the Volt a little bit.
It's not hard to. No, it's not hard to.
It's really not, and I mean, I took it around some turns.
you just got surprised. Pray for the tires to let go.
Yes, yeah, that I didn't find a stability traction control off switch in there. I don't think there is one.
Yeah, I've been looking for it because I kind of wanted to do.
I don't think there is one. I don't think they. I don't think the target market really cares about that.
The other thing about it too is like I find the build quality in the Volt, like. Initially, on a first impression, fantastic.
Yep.
You can walk around, like, say, a Chevy Camaro, for instance, and you can point out all these little things that is just like, that doesn't look good. Like the foam, gap spacing between the B pillars and the car's door on the Camaro. Like, it's just, it's god awful. Or, you know, or even the spacing between the windshield and the A pillar. It's just, it's like, it looks bad. If you look at the Camaro under a microscope, it looks bad. But the Volt, there's none of those problems. Everything is just it's everything feels solid. You know, like nothing like really bends or squishes or shakes. You know, everything is just it's very well put together. There's almost like no gap spacing. Everything is just at a bare minimal, like down to the millimeter. You know, inside and out. So they did a great job and building the car, because they knew that a lot of people would be looking at, you know, and scrutinizing, you know, anything that they possibly could. And you cannot scrutinize the assembly of the car.
No, I think the word I would use to describe, or the phrase I would use to describe the build quality of the Volt is button down.
But if you wanted to really, get anal about something, it's the touch. It's the touch sensitive interface in the middle.
Yep.
I like it, and it's effortless, but it's almost too effortless. Like, say I want to close the air vent on my right side next to the steering wheel there. I've turned my heated seat on almost every time.
Oh, because you kind of glide over it.
Yeah, I just kind of glide over it. You know, mm-hmm. Totally by accident. Like, not sure. I don't even realize I'm doing it until like my butt gets warm. I'm like, what?
What's going on here?
And because the satellite navigation screen is also touch sensitive, I will touch the screen, and then at my pinky finger or whatever will just kind of like lag down and accidentally turn on the climate control onto auto, and all of a sudden I got the fans blowing and everything.
Right. Right.
There's no quick off button either. You got to like sit there and you got to turn the fans all the way down. Mm-hmm. And
that's the one thing that I kind of found confusing. I couldn't figure this out at first. Because I tried turning that, you know, the fan speed up and down using the touchscreen, and you can't do that. You have to use the button.
No, you can. You press the climate button on the top there, and it basically there's a whole menu about the climate. Fan speed.
You know, every single time I tried doing that, it just didn't let me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was a little glitch in your system or something. Mine works. Sorry, but I have a feeling that my car is a little fritzy too, because it always says that my charge door is open even though it's not.
Oh, and probably like, bad sensor.
Yeah, right on the driver's display. And I mean, this thing has got, I put 700 miles on this car already. I've had it for not even a week,
and it's not there or not over yet.
No, and it's not over yet, because I'm going to Traverse City tomorrow morning to go drive the Buick. The new 2012 Regal GS. More on that in a minute, because we can still talk about the Volt a little bit, I think.
Sure.
What
do you think of the back seats?
They are a little cramped. And here's another problem they left out too. There's no air vents back there. I could be freezing up front with the AC on, and my buddies in the back seat, they'll be like, dude, turn the AC on. We're freezing. We're hot. We're sweating. There's no fans back here.
That's a common problem that happens across a lot of Chevy and overall GM vehicles. This is the case with even family vehicles like the Equinox and the Terrain.
Mm-hmm.
It's the case with the Cruze. It just doesn't really. Yeah, it's really a shame that there aren't any AC vents back there. And the thing. I mean, the way that the Volt's rear seat layout is it's really meant to comfortably accommodate four passengers or four people, you know, three of which are passengers, one of the driver, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at that, I think they looked at the, and obviously the reason that those seats are split that way is because that battery.
Yeah, because the battery runs through the middle of the car.
Right. But the thing that I really kind of feel surprised about is that they didn't really think about this. I don't know if they didn't think about it. I don't know if it was a cost-cutting measure. Maybe it was a combination of both. But, you know, they kind of optimized the rear seat there for the comfort of the passenger as much as they could. But, like you said, you know, no vents.
Well, I mean, okay, it's a nice, spacious captain's chair, but I've tried having, you know, a full car almost every chance I've had for that, you know, since I've had this thing, and I, you know, they've complained about no vents in the back, no armrests.
Yeah, armrests, that's another one.
And
yeah.
And minimal headroom. I look back at my buddy who's 5'11". His head is pretty much touching the rear windshield.
Oh yeah, because like, it's sloping back there.
Yeah,
and you know what? But the worst part is that you know, and again, I don't mean to say that this in some way makes the Volt, you know, a bad car. The Volt's a great car.
It's not a deal breaker.
It's not a deal breaker, yeah. Right? But it's these little things that I think that could be fixed, you know, to make it an even better vehicle. And when I was riding back there in a rear seat, I was doing it around 12, you know, around noontime, when the sun's right above your head. And I mean, I swear, my neck probably got some a tan.
Yeah, yeah. My buddies, like, they're like, dude, I'm sweating back here.
Yep.
So they definitely like forgot a few things in terms of passenger comfort.
Yeah.
But as far as being a driver, it's not bad at all. I mean, the seats are fairly comfortable, a little bolstered. You know, you're in a compact car. The steering wheel is pretty much that of the Cruise. It's a little smaller than, say, you know, what I had in the Acadia. So
right.
But it is easier to steer. You have two LCD screens that basically display all the driving information, and I flippin' love the intuitive energy info feature that you got on that thing, where like every time you fully charge the car, you know, there a pie chart shows up, and you can basically like see your overall efficiency, your mileage, everything, you know, how far you've gone in electric charge, and then how far you've gone on gasoline afterwards, you know, so on and so forth. And I do have a few numbers here, and this is all just from the Woodward Dream Cruise weekend. I went 331 miles, mm-hmm. And I went 52.3 miles of that on electrical charge. You know, initially I went 36 miles, and then I like plugged the car in, pulled it out. You know, never got a full charge, but I've accumulated 52.3 miles, and the rest of it was 278.8 miles on gasoline. I used only 7.96 gallons of gasoline in 331 miles. That equates to 41.6 combined miles per gallon.
Boom.
Not bad. But again, it's not a Prius 51 either. And today I drove to Adrian and back, which is about an hour and 50 minutes away from my house in St. Clair, and I averaged 47 miles per gallon, mostly because I didn't drive with a charge on the way back, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, it's a 200
mile. 47 or 37?
47.
47. That's not bad.
And the car's overall lifetime fuel economy reads 49.9. So people are kind of doing the same thing I'm doing, which is like they'll drive it around a lot, plug it in at night whenever they can.
Yeah.
And that's just how they're doing. And this thing is like, it's not meant, you're obviously like, if you were to take this thing against a Prius and you were to drive 500 miles or so, the Prius is going to get better fuel economy.
Yeah, but you're also going to feel like a schmuck driving it.
Yeah, clearly you will. But at the same, but if you're going, you know, 20 miles to the grocery store and back or whatever, you will use, you know, next to no gasoline.
Right. Or working back. See, the problem for someone like myself, you know, I live in an apartment complex here. There's nowhere for me to charge it. You know?
Yeah.
Nowhere for me to charge it. I mean, I could run an extension cord.
They tell you not to use extension cords.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, you can't do that. Well,
yeah, so
then
I tell you
really
not to,
much.
And yeah, and it takes about, you know, 9.5-10 hours, mm-hmm. to use with a 120 volt outlet. But if you say you're a customer and you want to buy the 240 volt charging station for your house to put in your garage, you're looking at setting yourself back, you know, over anywhere over $1,300, but it'll charge your car in 4 hours.
Here's what I would do. There's a little known secret that lamp posts or light mm-hmm. posts, there's a little box in the bottom of them for like service and electricians to service them.
Mm-hmm.
If you could get your hands on a key to open that box, there's three outlets in those usually, and they're all 240 volts. You just plug it in for free electricity, let it charge for a little bit, and run away. It's really tempting because there's just that kind of light bulb right outside of my window. So when I was driving the Volt, I was kind of really thinking about it.
240 volts. That's a three. That's a special like outlet, isn't it?
I don't know if it's 240, 220, one of those two.
Okay. Well, we do have a 240 volt outlet in the garage.
Is it 240 or 220?
240.
Okay.
And I think it has. You ever see what a stove plugs into?
Yeah, it's an electric like one of those. One of those big,
like circular, like yeah. three slits.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what they use.
Okay. So do you charge yours off of that, or do you charge it off the regular one?
Out of a 120, because the Volt doesn't come with, you know, its prongs.
Right.
On its cord is meant for a 120.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm stuck with that.
How do you like that charger? Is it intuitive?
Yeah, it's not very cumbersome at all. What I would have thought of, it like say I were to design it, they have this flashlight on the front of the head there. Where say it's dark and you want to plug your Volt in, you grip the head, and the flashlight comes
right,
on.
You press the button.
Yeah, you press a little button and you plug it in. Why couldn't you just have the charge door open with a little light?
Illuminated. Yeah.
Yeah, illuminated. And another thing, the key fob doesn't glow in the dark. So
no.
I can't even open my charge door in the dark because I can't see it. Unless I know what button it is, and I don't have that memorized yet.
Right. That's the other thing is why isn't there a keyless entry? You know, or a hands-free entry?
I don't know.
You got push button start.
And every time you want to get fuel in the car, you have to press a button
yep.
inside the cabin, which unlocks the fuel door. It gets so annoying because
you've never owned a Volvo, huh?
I filled this thing up twice already. 700 miles, okay? Come on. And yeah, every single time I go outside and I'm like, damn it, you know, I forget. So I mean that's a new feature people are probably gonna have to get used to, you know,
yeah.
if you buy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of, you know, actually pretty much all Toyotas and Lexus vehicles, which, you know, what I grew up with, you need to press a button on the inside to release that that door, the gas door. But then, yeah, I was kind of perplexed when I was driving when I first started getting some of these Chevy media vehicles. I was like, well, where's the button? There is no button. You just press the door, moron.
You just open it, man.
Yeah.
Come on now.
But that said, you know, I would still like to see, especially on the Volt, an easy filler system. You know, like Ford has with their capless
yep.
filler system.
Yeah, capless filling. Yep.
Oh man, it's just so annoying to like unscrew it, and you know, I don't want to sound like a pompous, you know, lazy prick, but you know, seriously, what's the point? You know, if Ford can do it that way. You know, fine, buy the patents, license the patents, I don't know, whatever. Just do it. It's so
yeah,
much
I
more
mean,
convenient. You
yeah,
don't
get
your hands dirty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Capless filling is all right. And then you also, I mean, and as far as like other features go, you do get the iPod connectivity, Bluetooth connectivity. I don't like the way the iPod is connected to because it, like, I think this is just a system they have in the compact cars because I didn't have this problem with the Acadia or the SUVs that I've driven. But it messes up like your song list. Where say I want to listen to artists, all right? Like you know on your iPod, you go to artists and you click the artist and then you click which album you want to listen to, or you can shuffle the songs or play all.
Right.
With this, they immediately go. You click your artist and it lists all their songs in alphabetical order, and it's so annoying if you know say an album is supposed to play in a certain order.
Well,
it gets annoying.
Yeah, I don't really. So if it if you click on the albums, right, it will list all the albums, and you click on an
album. Yeah, it'll list the album, and then you can click on an album, but you got to, like, think – but you got to think alphabetically, too, is, like, which album is where, and you got to remember who sang it. No. My iPod, like, I can – well, yeah, if you click albums, yeah, okay. But I never do that. I just click artists, and then from the artists, I could choose the albums.
But that's still
I can listen to an album.
It's still in alphabetical order, right?
I don't know. It's just but it's just the way my mind works. It's because it's simplified.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Well, maybe because I already know exactly who I want to listen to. Like, say I want to listen to, I don't know. I'm gonna tell you guys I listened to Between the Buried and Me. All right, I have three other albums.
Spears?
Yes.
Okay.
And rather than having to go and click on the album list, you know, and having to search through all the albums I have in my iPod, I can just click Between the Buried and Me, and it lists their albums, and I just click the one I want to listen to. It's easier, I think.
Personal problem. Britney Spears.
Whatever. Bluetooth, I mean, it's that new system. It's really easy to use.
Well, it's not the MyLink, though.
No, it's not MyLink.
That's the disappointing feature, is that for the 2011s, people who, you know, the early adopters, just like on the 2011 cruise, you know, no MyLink.
Well, it wasn't ready yet,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's right.
What can you do? And the Bose system rocks. It hits real good.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, you know, they don't like Bose, they, you know, because it's, you know, no highs, no lows. It blows because it must be Bose, you know, whatever, however that saying goes. I really like the Bose stuff. You know, I have the Pioneers in my cruise.
Uh-huh.
Those do really well, even though they're only rated at like 285 watts or something like that. You know, they don't have, you know, the 500 watt systems like the Mustangs do, or the, even the 1000 shaker systems the Mustangs offer. But, you know, I think that they're perfect for what they do. The Bose and the Pioneers,
yep.
I think they do well with them.
Yep, definitely. Let's.
Let's talk about the polar opposite of. You want to talk about the polar opposite of the Volt real quick, because it's going to be a quick one.
Go ahead.
2012 Camaro SS is what I got to drive for a few very short few hours. Unfortunately.
Ooh.
2012 new interior. This was an automatic 2SS convertible, orange, beautiful orange color. So of the interior, what about the interior? So, you know, obviously. This has been coming for a long time. Some people don't like this change or revision, I guess I would call it. They think that the, you know, the steering wheel doesn't fit. That it takes the uniqueness of the car. You know, it takes it out of the vehicle. I don't think so. So let's start with kind of the steering wheel with the driver's side and then go from there. The steering wheel, you know, it's now the Chevy part-spin steering wheel, which is not to say that it's a bad wheel. You know, this is a great steering wheel. It's grippy. It's comfortable. It's small. It's not as big diameter-wise as the 2010,
the donut.
2011. Yeah.
It's a cruise steering wheel, right?
It is. Well, I don't know. I think it's the same size as the cruise and the Volt and the upcoming Malibu and all those, you know, that series of wheels. But the... Uh-huh. The point that kind of goes from the 3 and 9 that flows into the 6 o'clock part is different. It's kind of like, first of all, this SS, the SS here, it's got SS badging on it, and it just looks different. I don't know. I guess it's the same size, but it's just different. Since the Camaro that I was driving, it had the orange exterior color, also had the orange interior accents. And a very nice touch, orange stitching, French stitching on the inside of the wheel. So you have a black wheel, orange stitching all the way through on the inside. Beautiful. I have some pictures on GM Authority if anybody would like to take a look. Some really nice close-ups that I took of the entire cabin and of the wheel as well. So check those out. You can just hit up the show notes, weekly.gmauthority.com. But I really like the wheel. It's much more maneuverable. I did not get a chance to take this out in a track. But it's a lot more grippy. It's a lot, it fits in the hand much better. And I imagine if you're on a track, you know, this will be a lot easier to steer when you're going through some tight hairpins. So yes, sir. That's the wheel. I mean, I think, you know, the wheel is a nice addition. I do think, however, that they could have done something different as far as the center of the wheel goes. You know, they didn't have to put that, you know, the cruise airbag or the Volt airbag, you know, compartment on the, in the center there. They could have done something unique to the Camaro. So you kind of go back, you know, you kind of win some and then lose some. And in this case, you're losing some uniqueness. As far as the gauges go, you know, I really found the numbers, the actual, the way that the speedometer and the tach, the way those digits are written out, a little bit awkward on the 2010 and 2011s because they were kind of very tall and stretched out. These are very, they're much more intuitive to read. It's just my opinion. So for some, they may find them to be ugly. I think they're very tastefully done. I think they're, these are kind of still retro, but not for the sake of being retro. They're retro for the sake of being tastefully done. And so that's, I think this pretty much completes the wheel and the speedometer part. You know, moving to the right side. Oh, by the way, big new feature, big new feature that was not available in 2011 convertibles. Rear seat view cam, floor yeah, mats. Backup. Nope, rear seat floor mats. Huge feature.
Oh, wow.
Huge. You know, this is like monumental. You know, but they are
there. You mentioned backup camera, didn't you?
Yes, the backup camera, that is the actual monumental feature. But even though the floor mats are real, but yeah, backup camera, it puts it in the rear view mirror there up top. It works, you know, it does its thing. It also has a nice little guide, so when you turn the wheel, it kind of points you as to where you're going to be going.
Oh, it's got those linear.
It does, and it's not something marks that I've seen before on any other GM vehicle. I think this is unique to either the Camaro or maybe it's their next generation wheel.
It's not.
It's not.
No. But I had it in the SRX.
But the way this one does it, the way this one does it with the, like the little yellow lines.
Yeah, the yellow lines that run, and when you turn the wheel, they bend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are vertical yellow lines.
Yeah, and that's also in the Volt.
Hmm. Okay.
It's their new hardware.
Okay, got it. So that's that. And, you know, the only thing that's left is the dash that many people are complaining about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the 2012 kind of solves that with that little piece on the passenger side. It starts actually right underneath, or right to the right of the air vent on the driver's, on the left of the driver's side. And it kind of runs all the way through and across the dash, just in the front of the dash. Now, I was surprised to know that that is a soft touch material. Not only is the material itself soft touch, but it's squishy. Like you can actually, like, you know, press it, and your finger and your palm or whatever you're pressing it with, your toe, will actually go in there. You know, it's very squishy, very soft, very nice texture. I like it. Again, you got the French style stitching that goes all the way across that new trim piece. So for those who didn't like that, you know, blackness, for lack of a better word, of the new dash or of the old dash, the new dash kind of solves that. Nothing has changed with the top part of the dash. That's still the same. Only the front part has changed. And I mean, I think that's it, except, oh, there is one more change I forgot to mention, and that is, so there's now a kind of a plastic trim piece that surrounds the inside or and the outside of the central AC vents. And it's cheap plastic, and I hate it. It's cheap plastic. I don't know why they decided to do this. It looks bad. I mean, the way that the 2010 and 2011 Camaros were, where it was just all black, it looked badass. You know, it looked great. This thing does not fit. It needs to be taken out. I hate it. I cannot stand it. It's cheap looking. I don't want to sound repetitive here, but I really dislike it.
Well, for the sake of not sounding repetitive, let's switch gears and talk about what we're doing this week.
Wait, one more thing. Remember that convertible cover that you and I had trouble putting in with those hooks?
Oh, yeah.
So those hooks are gone now. They're not plastic anymore. Now they've been replaced with a kind of a I don't know what you would call that, a string for a hook. And it's much easier to now hook and secure that convertible top cover.
Like a loop?
Yeah, it's a loop. That's it. Yeah, we have pictures of all these things. So it's much easier to secure that in. Really welcomed improvements. The one that I drove, by the way, it was the automatic. So it did not have the FE4 suspension package, the sport suspension package that's new for the 2012 model year for SS models that come in manual. It's really, you know, really welcome additions all around except for that stupid middle center part. God. Okay, let's move on.
Moving on. Thank you. This week we've got our first sneak peek at the 2012 Buick Regal GS. I'm going to be driving the Volt up to Traverse City. By the time this podcast has been published, I'll probably be driving it because it's happening tomorrow. And it's, you know, I don't know what to expect other than 270 horsepower manual transmission and 295 pound-feet of torque. There have been some other publications that have driven it prior to us. Guys like Straight Line and like Motor Trend, and it's they are quite surprised at the way it handles, even it being a front wheel drive car. But I don't know whether I'm going to be overly shocked.
I think you're in for a fun time.
It's going to be a good time. I mean, I've never been to Traverse City before, and it's pretty much the tour, like, up north destination for us Southeast Michiganders. It's a 250-mile trip up north.
So you should probably use half a tank of gas in that Volt, so it's good.
I might deplete the tank, I don't know.
Yeah.
I do wish I kind of had a Corvette, though, so I could try and cut the Google Maps time in half.
Well, I mean, you could still try that in the Volt. Nothing's stopping you, but... kind of
except a very low top speed.
Oh, come on. That's like, what, 100 miles an hour?
Exactly 100 miles an hour.
I don't know. That's fast. On a public road, that's fast.
Not quite. Oh, no, I'm going to take the hidden path, the Nürburgring.
Ooh.
Path. Oh. Just kidding. Anyway. Yes. With a Volt in tow. And for those of you that didn't know this weekend or just plain lived under a rock, Chevy was alive and well at the Woodward Dream Cruise. Very big presence there. They had pretty much it was a week-long celebration. They did a parade on Wednesday, I believe, with 50 Chevy Volts and a bunch of Corvettes, old and new and just, yeah, everywhere. Corvettes and so Chevys and Chevy runs deep.
In remembrance of their 100-year centennial.
Yes, this was their centennial parade, so it's probably, I mean, you only turn 100 once, right? So they did it big. Akerson was there. He was driving a Volt or a Corvette, I don't know.
He knows how to drive.
And there was are you saying he doesn't get driven?
Well, I thought that's what happened. I thought you either get driven or flown or one of those two.
You go chauffeur raid.
Magic carpet.
Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson were also there, the NASCAR drivers, because they drive Chevy.
Right. Well, supposedly.
What? But really, where was Johnny O'Connell and Andy Pilgrim? You know, where are the people that really drive Corvettes?
And where were the two cruise guys? Three cruise guys.
Oh, like Robert
Olivier
Huff
and
Olivier Beretta.
Yes.
Or no, that's he's Corvette.
Yes. Yeah.
And Oliver, there's a bunch of there's a bunch of race drivers that drive real Chevys,
mm-hmm.
The Corvettes,
cruises,
you know, the cruises,
cruising.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a shame.
Yeah. So you were there for both days. It kind of got rained out, right?
Well, I was there. Yeah, I was there. I made it the weekend day. I didn't get a chance to attend the parade, but you know, pretty much everyone else did. And there's pictures on the way. Okay. So. I was there Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
And weather went foul. The Dream Cruise, like the Dream Cruise day, was pretty much just Saturday, and it showed up on Sunday just to see if, you know, anyone was still hanging around. And pretty much it rained and everyone was just turned tail, went home. But Saturday, like, it was, the weather got so bad that the power went out, and cops had to pretty much, like, route traffic out of Woodward.
Wow.
That, yeah, there, I mean, there were reports of a small tornado in Royal Oak and just, like, stuff like that that really just, and for lack of a better, you know, term, they rained on everyone's parade.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, that's a good
metaphor. Chevy had a good setup, though. They had the Camaro, like, they had the Camaro 45th anniversary, they had the Bumblebee Camaro, they had the Camaro ZL1, you know, a lot of special edition Camaros.
Your favorite? What's your favorite?
The ZL1? Oh, well, I like the way the 45th anniversary edition looks. I haven't driven the ZL1 yet, but yeah, that'll probably be my favorite.
How did the Bumblebee look? Because I think I'm going to get that.
Oh, with the Bumblebee stripes? Yeah. I mean, I love the stripes on those stripes look so badass.
Yep.
There was also, you know, the Corvettes were there, you know, and they also had some old models too. It was a good setup. They had bleachers for everyone to, like, kind of sit and watch the cars go by. And then Ford was, you know, on the opposite side of Woodward, you know, in Mustang Alley in Ferndale.
Mustang doing their Alley, own. Huh?
Yeah, they shut down 9 Mile Road for Mustang Alley.
Does that does the Mustang Alley have a solid rear axle?
we'll go with a yes.
Okay. Yes.
Now, let's do the...
Before we go on, we got tons of news to get to, and I don't know if we'll be able to get to all of it today because we're kind of already running in the 50-minute mark. But before we do go on, we'll kind of take a little second or two to recoup, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Caddy ELR. We'll talk about the Caddy CL. We'll talk about, well, a whole bunch of stuff related to Chevy, Buick, GMC. Hopefully we'll get to Opel and Vauxhall as well. But before we do all that, I'd like to remind everyone that besides this very show, we also have the GM Authority website, gmauthority.com, where you can get all the stuff we talk about and a whole lot more pretty much every single day on the hour, updated with the latest General Motors news, vehicle reviews, rumors, anything and everything. So gmauthority.com is the place to go for that. And, you know, just if you don't want to wait for the show, that comes out once a week. Sometimes it comes out once in 2 weeks, depending on how many beers we have on certain Wednesday nights. Then it comes out twice a week or once in 2 weeks, but usually it comes out once a week. But if you don't want to wait for it to come out, then just go ahead and visit the site, gmauthority.com, and you should have your up-to-the-minute GM fix served straight to you. Okay,
to
well,
your face.
Yes, exactly. And we have, if you'd like to subscribe by email or on Twitter, on Facebook, you can do all that on there as well. All right, so Caddy ELR, Eller.
The Eller.
So this
Ella,
is,
Ella,
put it
sorry.
In the Eller.
This so is basically
the converge.
Yes.
Right? Yes, okay. Good. So Voltec powertrain, Voltec platform?
Voltec version 1.5. The Detroit, I believe the Detroit News is reporting that the ELR will be built in Hamtramck. So there's that. No, I'm sorry. Bloomberg is reporting that it'll be built in Hamtramck. Bloomberg is also reporting that it's going to be set around the price point of $57,000, just a little under the Tesla Model S.
All right.
So there's that.
Well, okay. So around the Tesla Model S, I think we can't yet speculate as to, by the way, two doors, right?
If it remains true to the concept, yes.
Okay. So, and by the way, what the pictures that we do have here, this is a concept. This is not the production version.
Yeah. This is also what Cadillac is calling the ELR concept.
Right.
Car, I believe.
So the Converge kind of got resurrected. I'm not sure why. By the way, I love the tiny little mirrors on this car. As if you'll be able to see anything out of those.
Right.
You know, beautiful. I think they kind of tweaked the Converge concept a little bit.
I think the only thing that looks different from what we saw at the 2009 Detroit Auto Show is different headlights. I think there's some yellow beams there.
And I think the tail lamp, the center tail lamp, is a little bit, that whole setup there is a little different.
I think it just might be the angle.
Oh, maybe. Could be.
But yeah, this thing, it pretty much looks identical to the Converge. The wheels are the same. You know, all the sharp cuts on the car look, I mean, this thing looks like it can go a million miles an hour, but it can't because it's Voltec.
You may see a 10 mile per hour increase in a top
speed. Right. Well, this isn't going to be exactly like the Volt. I guess it's going to come out with, when it comes out in 2013, a Volt Tech 1. Version 1.5, and it's going to be the batteries are going to be sourced from A123 Systems rather than the Volt's LG Chem supplier. A123 Systems is based out of Massachusetts, for those of you wondering.
Good.
And yeah, I'm ecstatic that they've gone back and reversed the decision to cancel it.
So what do you think? I mean, this is going to be a front wheel drive vehicle, right?
If it's Volt based.
If it's Volt based.
Yeah. And if it's built next to the Volt, yeah. It's a halo car. You know, and a bunch of rival automakers are doing the same thing. They're building their halo cars, like BMW. They have their new I division, and right, they have since announced the i3 and the i8. And the i8, if I was to compare the car directly to anything right now, it would be an i8, because that car is also an electric, sporty looking coupe. I don't know how much longer it's going to be than the ELR, but they've also have been talking about an i4.
Right.
So maybe that's going to be something more along the size of the ELR.
Right.
And that's also if the BMW isn't asking for, like, you know, six figures for the damn thing.
Yeah. Well, I really like the way the ELR looks. I mean, the Converge is a stunner. You know, was a stunner. I think continues to be a stunner, even, what is it, 2-3 years after its debut. So It's definitely the design has been aging well. But, you know, we've kind of had this discussion a few months ago, but maybe even a year ago when Hilton was on the show, and we even have a rendering of a four-door Converge. So My question is, would this car be better served to be a four-door version, to have a four-door version as well?
Well, I mean,
That's, you want to talk about Tesla Model S? That's going to be a competitor to the Model S.
Well, it directly, I mean, in terms of like size, drivetrain, everything, no, definitely no. But if you're going to just look at the price point, yeah, sure. There's also cars like the CT, the HS, whatever Audi's planning on coming out with. It's all over the place right now.
Yeah, but
it really
is. CT is like what, 30, and the HS is also in the 30s, and I think this car is going to be a lot more than 30 grand. You know, I think it's going to be double that.
Probably.
Yeah. But it looks great. A halo car, if it's going to be a halo car that they can eventually, you know, incorporate some of the characteristics of this vehicle, you know, into future Caddies. You know, and I think what we see here in the ELR is, and obviously in a Converge, is kind of a glimpse of the styling direction that we will see from Caddy in the next few years.
Or are we looking at that with the CL?
Well, let's talk about that too. Mm-hmm. So the CL, this thing is, I mean, this is a concept that they unveiled at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, it took everyone by surprise.
Wow. I mean, can you say, what else are you going to say when you see this car? Besides, holy sh...
Besides nothing, besides just letting your jaw drop and just drooling.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone who's listening to this show has seen one already, so we don't need to go into in detail, you know, and in depth in describing it. But
there's a lot of Eldorado, old school Eldorado in this car.
The only thing I got to say about this is, damn.
Yeah, just okay. Now this is probably gonna be a hard question for you, but this or the 16?
This.
Really, you would take the CL over the 16?
Yes.
Oh wow!
Yes, I'm putting my foot down. I cannot get over there's the gallery that we have on the announcement of this vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Image 7 out of 12, the 7th image. Wow. It's just like a, it's that one with the brown tinge.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh my God! It's just, I mean, I could look at this car for probably a few hours, you know, just
it's,
without really doing
it's
much.
It's so elegant looking. It's so classy looking. It's just it's perfect at Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. It's perfect at Pebble Beach. But what I'm really excited about, and I know that, like, obviously there's a lot of luxuries and things like that involved in this car, but what I'm most excited about is what they put under the hood of this thing, which is a twin-turbo 3.6-liter V6. You know, what most of us already know is the LLT or the LFX, featuring twin overhead cams, you know, and then along with the other things like direct injection, variable valve timing. And the cool part is that it's going to produce – or that this – layout produces 425 horsepower and 430 pound-feet of torque. That's LS3 numbers.
Can you repeat that again, V6. Please?
425 horsepower and 430 pound-feet of torque. LS3 numbers.
Basically, 430.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just it makes you think, like, you know, is this going to be GM's EcoBoost competitor?
Here's my question. I think it's pretty much a done deal that GM is going to have a number of boosted powertrains, power plants in the next few years, hopefully sooner rather than later, because EcoBoost is just kicking it out of the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
If you can kick out of the ballpark. But here's my question about the CL. I mean, production? Probably not. But
a statement? Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if Cadillac always does this. Every time they come out with a concept car, it makes people just go, holy Jesus. It's uh-huh. just that, because they look absolutely amazing. I mean, ULC aside, that thing just looks like a...
I want to be... Why can't I be one of those lucky schmucks in the seat of this car driving it through the countryside in California?
One of those paid, elegant-looking actors.
Oh, man. Come on. Just let me drive it for a second.
Right. I mean, it's just... Oh. Yeah, it really is. It's absolutely amazing. But here's what I want to ask you, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
It being a Cadillac...
Land barge.
You know, it's a land barge, and it's obviously kind of an opposite take in the direction that we kind of think Cadillac is going, where it's moving forward. You know, are we thinking that Cadillac is going to take a step back on itself and maybe release a full size vehicle akin to a land yacht like this?
You know, here's the thing, and yes, I think it will be a step backwards to release a land yacht, but I'm not so sure that this vehicle, that the CL, mm-hmm. you know, in production form, will be or would be a land yacht. And first of all, I don't think that they're ever going to make this car. You know, I don't think there's a question.
What
about
something
that.
Like this car? What if this is the Omega?
If this is the Omega, that's perfect. That's fine. I mean, it's not going to be a coupe or whatever this is with the French doors. I'm not really sure. But if this is, let's say this is a full-size sedan, right, based on the Omega or whatever that platform ends up being called,
right?
I don't think that will be a land barge. I mean, I think that what we see here is, you know, this is Pebble Beach. You know, they needed something that would, you know, keep something or other alive with Cadillac and that crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
They kind of released it. It's probably not that expensive to make one of these things. They're always drawing these things up in the labs. They're always
It's very expensive to make a concept
car. Well, it is, but I mean, it's not as expensive as moving production of the ATS or the XTS up by a year and a half, you know. So it's something to keep, to gauge people's attention, to kind of, to make sure that they're still, the Cadillac still, you know, remains relevant in the overall luxury landscape. And, you know, this is something that will get people talking. We're talking about it now. Plenty of others are going to be talking about it for months to come, you know. But I think that the Omega, whenever it does come, it's going to be huge. It's going to be long. A 7 Series is huge and long, you know, and wide.
That's what she said.
Yes, you know, it's. I think the size of the car is irrelevant. I think what really matters is how it's tuned, you know. So on one hand, you have something like a Lexus LS, And on the other hand, you have, you know, a BMW 7 Series or a Mercedes-Benz S-Class. You know, both are similar in dimensions. They're similar in exterior proportions, similar in powertrains, power plants, but they drive completely different. So it'll be very interesting to see where they go with their full-size offerings. I still think that, you know, Caddy should, you know, we've talked about this, so I'm not really going to go into it, but Caddy should just be the performance luxury brand. Leave something like this, like a land yacht, so to speak, to Buick.
Yeah, but I think with between the Tri-Shield and the Wreathing Crest, Cadillac's got a better shot of appealing to people that would buy a car like this.
Hey, but imagine this, right? What if instead of Cadillac, we saw a Buick CL, right, at Pebble Beach? That, I mean, obviously it wouldn't look this way because of the obvious art and science.
I don't think Buick's ready for that.
Well, sure, but think about it. What would that do? Would that instantly put Buick on the map? Not in the map of obviously its products, but it would change the perception of quite a few people, I think.
Yeah, slightly. This kind of does it with Cadillac too. It's just like,
right,
you know, if they can design something and that looks this good, it's like, why don't they? And I think that's what maybe Cadillac is kind of testing the waters here. It's like, okay, what if we just go balls out on a, you know, on and make the most elegant car we can? Would it be able to compete with the likes of Bentley, Rolls-Royce?
I mean, is that really what they're going after now? I mean, they're down to three freaking products in the Caddy portfolio, three models.
Well, right now, yeah, but this is it's not getting any lower. You know, it's only going up.
Yeah.
So, but let me ask you: kind of like what Mercedes, did? Because at one point, Mercedes made the most expensive car in the world with,
Well, there was the McLaren. That was one.
No. Back it was basically it was a full-sized vehicle. It was a land yacht. It was big, it was long, it was elegant, it was super luxurious, and it was at one point the most expensive car in the world. I can't remember the name right now, and I apologize for that. S-Class. I don't know what the hell it was called. And then you look at Porsche, okay? What they did with their
Panamera?
Back in the 80s, it was the 9 yeah. Son of a gun. I sound like such a moron right now, but
I can't remember what it's called either.
But yeah, basically at one point that was the fastest car in the world and the most advanced. Yeah, all this new computer technology, no one saw like the kind of features that Porsche had before the Ferrari F40 came out, and then became the fastest car in the world at 200 and at 201 202 miles per hour.
Okay. So
with these cars that are just the, you know, the biggest, the best, the fastest in the world. And even Cadillac with their CTS-V sedan, made claim to being the fastest production car in the world. If cars like that, and if Cadillac can continue to making something that's the best in the world at something, you know, maybe they've got a shot at making the most a luxurious car, you know. So of course that's subjective.
Well, why don't they? I mean, instead of doing that, which will sell by what, the dozens?
Yeah, by the dozens.
You know, why don't they focus on making the best compact, the best midsize, the best full-size luxury vehicles on the planet?
Should be the best anything, but yeah. when you've got a car that people are gonna like compare this to the last words in luxury like Bentley and Rolls-Royce. Mm-hmm. It's like right away.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something that, there. I just
the prestige of that brand just shoots through the roof.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting question. I just don't know if it's viable, you know, on the face of it. Whether a Cadillac should be focusing on it and you know, maybe 10 years down the road.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this isn't something that could happen tomorrow.
No. Well. Is that it for Caddy? Should we go on to
That's Chevy? Yeah, before we exhaust Cadillac.
You know, there's this thing called the law. And
we are above the law.
Somewhere. We like to think so. Only on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. But Some people aren't, but GM thinks they are above the law as well, because here's what's happening here with this beautiful Chevy Impala lawsuit.
Hey, talk about a PR nightmare.
Oh, man. Class action lawsuit. We discussed this a few weeks ago on this very show. 423,000 disgruntled Chevy Impala owners. That's the Chevy Impala from 2007 to 2008. Obviously, they're suing GM for rear alignment issues. And GM kind of, you know, first of all, rear alignment, what does that do? That allows, or that makes owners have to replace their tires on a very frequent basis, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 miles in that, you know, period of time, which is ridiculous. You know, a tire should last anywhere from 10, 15, 20, sometimes even 30,000 miles, maybe even more. So, you know, you can imagine the expense that owners of the 423,000 owners of these vehicles are, you know, going through. And it's just BS. So here's what GM has to say. You know, it needs to be fixed. Here's what GM needs to say about this. They say that, and by the way, this is an official court document.
Well, it's their lawyer. Yes. And he's got huge balls.
Right, yeah. Or maybe he just has no brains. You know, they say that GM cannot be possibly held liable for this kind of, you know, an issue with a vehicle that they built simply because, you know, the afflicted vehicles in question were built during the time of the old GM and that the case should therefore be thrown out and dismissed. This is, of course, according to lawyer Benjamin Jeffers. Who claims that, quote, new GM did not assume liability for old GM's design choices, conduct, or alleged breaches of liability under the new warranty, and its terms expressly preclude money damages. End quote. Really?
Yeah.
So, if that's the case, you know, if old GM, I mean, obviously this is kind of ludicrous. I mean, to even be discussing this right now is ludicrous. But in case some people need some sane comments to be made, here's what I would say. If that is the case, and if new GM cannot be held liable for old GM's responsibilities, why don't they just dump me as an OnStar subscriber? You know, those people who subscribed back in 2008, for instance, for their three-year plans, why don't they just dump those guys and say, hey, guys, screw you. Sign up for another contract. That was the old GM you subscribed with. How about you now subscribe with a new GM? Mm-hmm. You know, this is purely, I mean, yes, probably on the face of it, on a legalese basis, this may hold water, but
it's totally classless.
It's totally classless, and it totally gives a big middle finger to the owners of GM products.
And this is a company that already has a huge target on its back.
Exactly. You know, this is basically, and the hilarious part is that, you know, this is saying screw you to the Americans, to Americans who in part helped to bail out this very company. So screw you guys, keep buying your products, but screw you anyway. That's what they're saying.
Yeah. And honestly, like how in the world can this
lawyer do this?
It's kind of ridiculous because these guys are like claiming all this stuff. But you remember, you know, about this time last year, it might have even been, you know, a couple months ago. I don't know. Can't remember because time flies. The Cadillac SRX Turbo. Mm-hmm. And they want to do that recall because people were filling it up with regular fuel, even though the car specifically tells you not to.
Right.
To use and it says to use premium. Mm-hmm. And for those people got their recall.
Right.
How in the hell can that was something that was clearly those people's fault. How in the hell can these people where it's obviously it's not their fault that they have alignment issues in their car.
Hey, but you know if you think about it, that SRX was engineered under old GM.
Exactly. maybe they just fired that lawyer and got this guy.
I don't know. I hope they're going to fire this guy because this guy is clearly a moron.
Or
he's not being managed well by the people at GM.
He's obviously doing his job, but GM isn't.
No, GM isn't doing their job in that case.
Yeah, they're not.
GM is allowing their lawyers to run free with these kinds of statements that public statements.
Yeah,
somebody
exactly.
On the legal team at GM who is obviously isn't doing their job. So All I'm going to say is heads are going to roll.
Someone's going to, yeah, either heads are going to roll or you're going to have a lot of unhappy people.
So,
and a lot of bad publicity.
Yeah, I think that's already coming. $19,995. That's how much you would expect to pay in Canada for the 2012 Chevy Orlando.
Yeah, where's Hilton when you need him?
Yeah, I know. I think he's driving his Camaro right now to, well, let's just say it's involved with paraphernalia. Or maybe not. I don't know. Hilton, help me out here. So, I don't know, 20 grand, right? 20 grand for a 7-seater.
Uh-huh.
I'd say that's just what Chevy needs in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah, because when you look at what's the cheapest 7-seater you can get in Traverse. America? The Traverse, and that's almost 30 grand.
30 grand, baby. So you can get one of these guys for 20 grand, or you can get a Traverse for 30 grand. 7-seaters, both of them 7-seaters. Obviously, Traverse can do a lot more, like tow, et cetera, et cetera. It's much more luxurious. It's got a lot more body roll. You know, that's also a feature. But I don't know. Why isn't this vehicle coming to the U.S.? I don't get it. Is the Delta platform not good enough? Is this car not good? What the heck is the deal? Is it a capacity issue? Where is this car being made?
Maybe Korea, as far as I know.
Ah, so they probably don't have enough capacity. They clearly don't have enough capacity at Lordstown because, you know, obviously they would have to build this at Lordstown.
Well, and Orion's filling up.
That's right. Yeah, because the Verano is the Verano with the Sonic are getting in there.
Mm-hmm. There is, I mean, but there are like a few mothballed assembly lines here, like in Spring Hill, mm-hmm, where it's just a powertrain plant right now.
Right.
There's an assembly plant down there.
Yeah.
That's possibly really strange. Build.
I think this is definitely a production issue. Purely a constraint issue.
It could be. It could also be that maybe there's something coming. You know, something that fits the American consumer's agenda a little bit better than the Orlando does. Well, you know, but that's just pure speculation, yeah. Of course.
I don't know. I think this car, it would be a great vehicle, you know, to really compete with the likes of the C-Max, Mazda 5, Kia Rondo. I don't even know if Kia still makes that. But, you know, and even with things like the Kia Sorento, which has three rows, Equinox doesn't. We've talked about this before. You know, 23 miles per gallon in the city, 35 miles per gallon on the highway. It's got tons of cargo space. That's 56 cubic feet or 1,594 liters of cargo space. McPherson struts in the front, compound crank axle at the rear. You know, so that's 20 grand, basically $19,995 for the LS. $22,295 for the LT and $29,735 for LTZ. Now, this is Canadian dollars, right?
Yes.
So this would be even less for us. Let's see. So let's just take this 20 grand. Let's convert the currency here from Canadian dollars to U.S. dollars. So let's say $19,995. Whoa, the Canadian dollar is actually worth more right now.
Surprise, surprise, our economy sucks.
Yeah. So there you have it, folks. I don't know. I hope the Orlando's going to come to the States. I mean, it's kind of interesting because it's everywhere except for the States, for the United States.
Yup.
Yeah. I think we can wrap this up with some Buick Verano.
I think people would rather hear about the upgrades to the HD Sierra.
Okay, let's do it. Let's go. Let's
real
go.
Quick. It's all about numbers. 3500 HD can now tow 23,000 pounds in max fifth wheel towing. That's 23,000.
Man, that's like
pounds.
That's like 23 of me.
That's up from 21,700 from last year, and they fortified the truck's box seals, rear springs, U-bolts, box mounts, upgraded the shocks a little bit, and they have their latest victory in the pickuptrucks.com HD Herdlocker comparison test, you know, as kind of like a validation for the fact that this car or this truck could tow more than was advertised. So they go when they went ahead and upgraded it.
So let me get this straight. This car is, or this truck, pardon me, mm-hmm, is, it has less on paper power than the Ford
less on,
and
yes,
the Ram.
Yeah, less horsepower, less torque, but does much better in the real world.
So if they can crank out another, 1,700 pounds they got out of that? Something like that, 1,300 pounds? If they cranked out 1,300 pounds extra in max fifth, just by updating, you know, making these little updates around the truck, how much more can they squeeze out of this to make something like a 4,500?
I don't know. Maybe at that point you might need a more powerful engine.
Right.
I don't know. And you also have the revisions basically make it the best, the class leader overall. Beats Ford, beats Dodge's ratings, as does its conventional tow rating of 18,000 pounds. That's just using a ball hitch.
Wow.
Up from 17,000 last year. Max payload is also increased with a rating of 7,215 pounds up from last year's 6,635 pounds.
Can we like have our own, like the GM Authority, have our own rating system? Like you can just call it 7 Alexes. Like you can now tow or you can now haul 7 Alexes. 7,000 pounds, 7 Alexes.
The maximum gross combined vehicle weight rating is now at 30,500 Alexes.
30 Alexes, right, exactly.
30,000, 3.5 Alexes.
Yes. Updated GPS system too, huh?
Yes, it's probably nothing different than the Acadia. So
okay.
What I saw on the Acadia.
But this one is hard drive driven rather than
DVD. Yeah, no DVDs. That's pretty much the path that everyone's... The Acadia Denali was hard drive driven as well.
Okay. Well,
they will hit dealerships the fourth quarter. No pricing yet. It's coming quarter four, 2011, and I'm pretty sure that the Chevy's getting the same upgrade. So. Yeah.
I wouldn't think why they wouldn't. Well, I think we've exhausted our time for today. I think we're about an hour and 20 minutes in already, and we got to let these good people go. Does that sound good?
Sounds fantastic.
Good, because I know you got to pack.
Yes.
I know I got to write stuff and do all this other stuff.
I need my beauty sleep.
And the beer. So.
Oh, well, that'll hopefully be on the house when I'm up there.
Yes. Wait, by the way, don't drink and drive.
Correct.
So, yeah, thanks so much for being here, Manny. And thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you to all of our listeners for listening and staying with us and sticking with us through our very entertaining show. And as we do at the end of every GM Authority Weekly, we're going to welcome Bob Lutz to join us here next time on GM Authority, on the GM Authority Weekly show. And of course, you know, not just Bob Lutz, right? Any person who works for GM. That's what we're going with now, right? Yeah.
Yeah, if you can remember.
Yes. So if anyone, if you'd like to come on the show, just let us know. You can do so on Facebook at facebook.com/GM Authority. You can also hit us up on Twitter. twitter.com/GM Authority. You can also write into us to podcast@GMAuthority.com and call us at 313-355-3GMA. Show notes for this show are at weekly.GMAuthority.com, and well, that's all we got because Manny's got to head on over to drive the Buick Regal GS, and the General has been served. Please rate the show in the iTunes store, head on over to iTunes, and search for GM Authority Weekly. Is anyone-